It's 12 Enough, Season 8, Episode 10, with your host Jonathan Malone and guest host Jamie Washam. Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your host, Jonathan Malone, is the pastor of the First Baptist Church in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Jamie Washam is the pastor of the First Baptist Church in America. It's everywhere. It's a PAM church, but it also can be found in Providence, Rhode Island. This podcast is brought to you by Liturgical Snobbery, taking fashion and ecclesial elitism to a whole new level. And Lent. At least try to pretend that you're sad.
Isn't Lent the stuff that you find in your pocket after you get out of the laundry?
That's a Baptist Lent, right? All right, we're back. Good. So, I'm probably put that in there, Jamie. So, I'm here in my office, so folks know where I am, in East Greenwich, in lovely East Greenwich, with Jamie Washam.
Good to be here. Good to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you here on the show. Is this your first podcast?
This is my first podcast with you.
Oh, but you've done others.
Well, we podcast our sermons every week.
Oh, that doesn't count.
That doesn't count?
No, that's like a rated, no.
Okay, because we don't have editing magic like you have.
Right. And I can put in the music, because I got music. I'll put in animal sounds if I need to.
Good goodness.
Yeah. If I ever have to swear or anything, then I'll put in like a cow noise or Ooh. Something. Yeah, right, stuff like that. Whatever moves me.
Okay.
So, but I do have one, before we get into our biology and all that, I have a question that I've been really, you know, dying to ask. Because you're from Texas originally, right?
This is true.
Okay. What part of Texas?
I grew up in Midland. It's West Texas, out near New Mexico.
Okay.
I could listen to public radio at night from New Mexico.
Was it from a pirated station?
It was not from a pirated station, okay. But that is the station, blessed be, that introduced me to Nina Simone.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Remember the program with Mary McPartland, they had dueling pianos?
Oh, yeah.
And that was on one night, and I just lost it. And this is when you still, I'm dating myself, had to go to a music store.
Right, right.
And go through the bins to try to find the one with the song that I loved. And so thank you, New Mexico Public Radio.
Right. And yeah. Nina Simone.
Nina Simone.
I know Netflix has a documentary out about her that's supposed mm-hmm. to be amazing.
Well, she held her own then and still now. I mean,
yeah,
she's no joke.
People should listen to her recording of, is it Strange Fruit?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one that really got me that first night was a recording of Little Girl Blue, where she's playing one melody on the piano and mm-hmm. singing another song at the same time. I mean, she just slays it. It's unbelievable. My son asked me last night to sing two songs at once, and I said, I can't do that. And I thought, but Nina can.
But Nina can.
Right.
Well, you can't be great at everything.
It wouldn't be fair.
No, right? Yeah. So, but the question I had,
yes,
since you're from Texas,
yes,
Friday Night Lights, the TV show,
oh,
is it good or not good?
I have not watched the show. You know why? Because, Brother Jonathan, I lived it. I lived it. My high school, Robert Eadley High School.
Wow! And they don't. That's not ironic.
That is not ironic. And until in my freshman year in high school, our flag was the rebel flag, which as an adult I recognize as highly inappropriate.
Right, right.
But our main rival was
the
Odessa Panthers.
Oh.
Mojo. Yeah, so that was their big fight. So I remember, and so we had, that was our big rivalry always, and I mean, football, high school football is pretty king in West Texas in particular.
Right.
And the team from Odessa, the rumor was, mm-hmm. had an old derrick on their property, so their football players had multiple uniforms. They got flown to games in Dallas, whereas our guys had to schlep on the bus for 6 hours.
Right.
And so they were our big rivals, and I remember
Odessa.
One night, Odessa, Permian. I won't tell you about the rivalry between Midland and Odessa because it will taint everything else I have
right,
to say
right.
here.
Right, right. We'd have to revoke your ordination.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I remember the coin toss that night. There was a tie in the football game, and it was won by a coin toss. Not unlike our presidential contests.
Right, right. Iowa seems to be following that practice.
Yeah, so maybe there'll be a hit TV show after.
It already has been. It's called Friday Night Lights.
No. I mean, after the campaign.
Oh yeah. Well,
another important thing that's decided by a coin toss.
By coin toss, right. Sure. And why not? And why not? I'm sure there's like a game show in Japan that's all about the coin toss. Mm-hmm. So it's a great show.
I haven't watched it, but I lived it, so I felt so like it was redundant.
Right. It was. I mean, there's.
I can go back and read my junior high journals,
right,
and then
well,
I'll know.
I mean, there's like human drama.
I've heard
involved.
It was good.
Yeah,
I've heard it was good.
It's good, but we'll still continue this podcast. But
even though I can go binge watch it later, perhaps.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Today's the first day of Lent.
It is.
It's Ash Wednesday. Neither Jamie nor I have ashes on our foreheads because we're Baptists, gosh darn it.
You know, but I have to say, I really have kind of embraced this. In my prior call, my church, I would get to, you know, we would have a Fat Tuesday pancake supper.
We did that last night.
Right? And how many people did you have?
About 40.
Exactly. We would always have the, you know, people out the doors.
Oh, wow.
40, 50, 60 people.
Yeah.
And if I had an Ash Wednesday service the next day,
no.
Crickets, six. Yeah. I mean, that's human nature.
Yeah.
So I went together with local area neighborhood clergy, and we would do ashes to go.
Right, right.
And since I don't have a liturgy because I'm Baptist, I would just say, hello, sister, you're going to die. And they'd look at me like, can I switch to the Catholic line?
You're going to die.
We're all going to die.
It's like a boy named Sue.
Well, you know, consider my roots. But then I would say, so how are you going to live? Right? So then,
nice.
Yeah, so that to me is what this is about. And I find this reflection on mortality really meaningful.
You don't want to just say, remember from dust were you made and
dust
you
I would say
shall
that
be.
Too. And,
oh, okay.
And I would try, I would really work to get the ashes from last year's palms, and mine would always be super chunky because it's kind of messy to do that.
It takes a long time to get those palms down.
Well,
my
Episcopalian brother showed me that he has a special like coffee grinder that he reserves just for the ashes.
Wow.
So they can be super fine.
Well, Episcopalians can afford that.
I don't know, but he graciously just brought me a cup of ashes to share because I was, I think, kind of lacerating people's foreheads with my chunky ashes and my frightening words.
Right. Well, we'll do a service tonight. We do ashes.
Okay.
But I have people write down whatever it is they need to give up or whatever sin they need to give to God. We burn those.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do this, you know, Sunday's palms or Wednesday's ashes because
you didn't keep them.
No, they're composted.
Oh, I like that.
So,
I appreciate that. Well, this is it's an accelerated compost process.
Right, yeah, yeah, it is.
We'll get into compost later, God willing, and talk about that transformation process. But
any podcast
spoiler
that brings up compost is a golden podcast.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's going to be... Oh, man. So, all that being said, it's Ash Wednesday, so we'll do ashes tonight. So I'll put ashes on my forehead tonight and then go right home and wash them off right away.
Because you don't walk about in public.
No, because if the Southern Baptists see me, then they'll say, I knew it, you know, and I don't need to give them any more ammunition.
Well, let me just devil's advocate you here for a minute. I mean, because the point of the ashes is humility, but if one continues to wear them publicly, does that become a bit, is that too demonstrative for you? Is that?
No, I mean.
We don't have uniforms as clergy that identify us besides your zipper Bible.
Except my zipper Bible. My...
It's good. The stuff doesn't fall out.
Right, right. And it has it has at least one bookmark with the Footprints poem on it. My zipper Bible. I don't have a zipper Bible. I wish I did. But
you lost that bookmark.
I did. I lost that bookmark. And it has my name engraved in the pleather on the front. So, I mean, that's a good question. I think because it's still, even though this is a Christian-dominated culture, Ash Wednesday is not a part of that Christian culture. So even here in Rhode Island, you know, like what, 95% Catholic,
right?
You know, so everyone should be wearing ashes. We're not going to see a lot of it. So I think it is kind of stepping outside of the rhythm of life for the day, and just to know that it's on your forehead. So I would say it isn't demonstrative, because there aren't bragging rights. It's more this is who I am.
Okay.
That would be my approach to it. I don't do it because the same reason I don't wear a collar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the context of my community, when we do the ashes, right. That makes sense. I will keep it on until I get home. And,
right. You wear, oh, the ashes you'll wear.
Yeah, the ashes. Yeah, not. I won't wear, I will not wear a collar.
I feel like I'm in clergy drag when I do that. It definitely feels like I will wear a robe sometime, but I feel like if I wear a collar, I've appropriated something that isn't authentically mine.
Right.
And I appropriate a lot of things that aren't authentically mine without a lot of, I don't suffer from that, but that feels a bit odd to me.
Right. Yeah. I wear a robe on communion Sundays. But yeah, the collar, so I can understand when women would wear a collar, because to go in, in public, especially in hospitals, mm-hmm. to say I'm a pastor, because mm-hmm. it's, there still is this assumption like, a woman pastor, that's crazy.
I do get asked, are you like, should I call you Pastrix? Reverend, like they have really curious.
Right.
I said, no, Jamie's fine.
Yeah, right. Right, please.
Because it's gender neutral.
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. That's true. That was smart.
That's handy.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you plan that?
Talk to my mother and father.
Oh, okay.
Thank them.
Next episode.
Foresight.
I have a surprise for you. We have over here your mother and father.
That would be exciting.
That would be something. So would you wear ashes all day?
I don't know that I would go to an Ash Wednesday service first thing in the morning. I mean, I guess I have, but it startled me. And I think perhaps that's kind of the point, when you get a haircut and you catch your reflection in a window, in the mirror, you're expecting it. But in the window, you think, oh, who's that?
Right.
And I would see this thing and I think, oh, right, there is something there. I have, but again, it because it wasn't something I grew up with. It certainly made me more mindful of it, which perhaps is the point. But
so, folks, by the time this gets out there, it'll be too late. But next year,
perhaps,
do ashes or don't.
Mm-hmm.
We are resolutely saying it does. You can do whichever.
Well, I think it just points to the contrition in the heart, right? So one,
that would be the hope.
Right, right. So I think all these things, if it's in service of that greater end, then yes, use it. If it isn't.
You can read that passage about saying you need to wash your face and not let people know that you're fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Do that instead. And then you can feel self-righteous.
No, hopefully not. No.
Oh,
you might have missed the point.
What?
Yeah.
No. Well, on that, let's let's go right to our Rylage.
Rylage. I'm talking about Rylage.
Okay, so the Rylage. I'm going to go first. We just watched the Super Bowl. It just happened.
Yes.
I'm not assuming you watched it.
I did not.
Okay. I did, because I have a 12-year-old who's into football.
Okay.
So.
Are you going to let your 12-year-old play that game?
No.
Okay.
No. No.
Broken fingers aside, concussions are pretty much...
Right, right. No, I let him play the tuba, and that's enough.
Mm.
That's a sacrifice right there.
And it's sort of protective, wrapped in that casing of sousaphone.
Right, yeah. I know. Lord help me if he ever...
It'll definitely goes, keep the...
If the, he gets into marching band, I don't know what I'll do.
What I can say is that has certainly... That will keep potential suitors at bay. Well done.
Yeah.
Protective bubble, Daddy.
That's right.
Okay.
See that? See what I did? I watched most of the Super Bowl. I took a nap during it because that's what I do
because
I didn't care. But there was one commercial that did get me.
Okay.
And it was about, I think it was Quicken Mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this way they say we're going to make it easier for people to get a mortgage. It's kind of like an app. You just like press go and you get the mortgage.
Do they not remember 2008?
I apparently not.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, I'm like, ugh, that's not great. But then here was what they sold. Here was their whole shtick. We get more people mortgages. They'll have to buy things for their houses. When they buy things for their houses, more people will have to make things. So they'll have more money so they can get mortgages so they can buy things for their houses. And now everyone will be getting more things.
Mm-hmm.
You see where this is
driving me kind of nuts? Yeah.
Like the whole premise of this commercial, their philosophical selling point is that when you have things, you're happy. And people who make the things are happy because they're getting money as well.
So they can have more things.
So they can have more things.
Hmm.
So things bring happiness.
Well, you can't sell intangibles.
Right. But they are.
Right.
That's what they're trying to do, and basing it all on the more mortgages we put in people's hands. I mean, yet that whole premise, that whole commercial lie,
right?
And to put it in this feel good kind of sense of like, we're helping the economy. We'll get more people doing jobs, making artisan cribs. I mean, that was one of their things, like, you know, get a router and make a special crib. Or no, actually, it was like feet for a couch, like handmade feet for a couch.
You can choose your own animal claw.
I guess, wow. Right? I mean, let's just go to the absurd. If we're going to sell an absurd product, which
is that absurd? You know, the claw and ball?
I know. I want a scepter with that on the top.
Wow.
That would be cool.
I want to see your pulpit. And friends, this is why Baptists
right.
don't robe and,
right.
and have special.
It just goes right to our head.
Wants. That's right.
Right. And,
feet,
and
apparently.
I want a trained falcon that will land on the scepter. Right. I mean, how cool would that be if you have like a dark wood, like an oaken scepter with a claw on the top and then a hawk?
You've just been reading Harry Potter again.
Right.
You just want to be a wizard.
Wouldn't you?
Well, I do like the cloak.
I mean, right? I don't want the hat. I say no to the hat.
It's back to costumery.
Yeah, as Baptists, we don't get that kind of pageantry.
Liturgical snobbery.
Right.
Liturgical
snobbery, that's right. And, you know, as long as we can put down other people for wearing the wrong color at the wrong season.
I don't think that's it. I think you just got to revel in your own. Let others do their thing, you know. I
mean, you are so tolerant of others. I guess that's good.
Tolerant isn't it. I mean, I'm not interested in tolerance. I mean, I tolerate stinky smells. I'm not interested in being tolerant. I mean, I'm just probably a little bit more libertarian. You do your thing, I do mine. And you know what? It'll be all right.
But you don't want to say, like, when someone's wearing red during Advent, you wouldn't be like, come on. It's Advent. It should be blue or purple.
I'm the one wearing red. So, probably.
Okay, well.
I'm asking for a long rope, perhaps, that would be so I can hang myself. But I didn't grow up in a liturgical context, so all of this is still.
Still new to you.
Yeah.
Welcome to the American Baptists.
Thank you.
We have room for everyone.
Even you.
Even you. All right, so anyway. Mm-hmm. Commercialism it does drive me nuts.
Well, and particularly because they're saying one thing and intending another. I mean, they're trying to sell this idea of home and productivity and people being self-reliant and creating things, but
right.
It's all in this guise of just buy more stuff that you probably don't need.
Right.
I mean, I remember it was right before Christmas. I was in Job Lots, another one of our sponsors here. And
that's where I get all my cereal.
Well, I was in there, and there was this couple having a conversation. He was like, I don't know what to get her. I don't know what to get my grandmother. Mind you, it's like a day before Christmas, and he's in Job Lots. And he goes,
just buy a bin of shampoo.
Well, he says to his presumptive wife, you know, she said that she doesn't want us to get her anything, but I'm going to find her something. And so I walked up to him. I'm like, I am a random stranger in Job Lots. But if your grandmother, who I am presuming is 80 to 90 years old, says she doesn't want anything, she doesn't want anything. He looked at me. I said, take her out to dinner. Does she live far away? No, she's here in town. I said, she would prefer you going to spend time with her and having
wow.
a meaningful interaction. He's like, you're probably right, because she has like 15 grandkids and we all just get her a bunch of junk. I said, do you think that your grandmother wants some cheap tchotchke from Job Lots that was made by child labor somewhere else?
Did you play the child labor card?
Of course I did.
Of course you
did. I don't know this man in Job Lots. You know, and I said,
could be
you know,
a potential parishioner.
I don't work for your grandmother, but I'm here on her behalf. And then I dropped the mic and went to another aisle.
And people should know that Jamie does walk around with a microphone. She has like a bag of them.
I got him at Job Lots.
Right. Well, where else would you get
him?
And that's Ocean State Job Lots for those who are outside of Rhode Island.
That's right. It's the equivalent of dirt cheap in Mississippi.
Right. That story has endeared itself to me. It really has. I mean, Christmas tree shop, I still won't go to.
I don't know that one.
It's horrific.
Okay, I don't want to know.
No, yeah. It's the title of the store is Christmas tree shop. So.
Are they open all year?
All
just,
year.
What did they sell in August?
Well, so you take the stuff that Job Lots looks at and says, like, I don't know if we can sell this.
We did have to take back some stuff that had expired a full year before we purchased it. So now I know. It
right.
may look like exotic, organic
right.
stuff, but it may have expired before you were born.
Right.
So just check that.
So I do get all my Bob's Red Mill cereal and stuff at Ocean State Java, mm-hmm. all their oatmeal and stuff. And it's very good. High quality.
Yeah.
Bob's Red Mill.
Check the expiration date. That's all I can say.
It's oatmeal. I mean, it's oatmeal.
Right. Well, some other stuff I thought.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That. Ocean State Job Lot, it's going to be fine.
Inadvertent plug. You're
could
welcome.
Be, it could be worse.
Could be worse.
So she didn't need, that grandmother didn't need all that.
She didn't. And, but you know what? He kept wandering up and down the aisles, eyeballing something. I said, meaningful card where you write her something, take her somewhere, go spend time with her. That's right. The gift. And he was like, well, you're right. I was like, so please.
Take her to Arby's.
She doesn't, I mean, she wants to be with you. She doesn't want some little bobble-headed solar.
Right. But, in reality, probably window. This grandmother is like some crazy person who has like China cabinet after China cabinet filled
because
with all these little
tchotchkes.
Because
she has 15 grandkids who buy her all the stuff that she doesn't want in lieu of spending quality
no,
time
no,
with
this
her.
This is the one that spends all her time just looking at him and saying, I need another.
No,
need
she
another.
Told him explicitly she for years that she didn't want anything.
You're really defending this grandmother.
Yeah, because I'm going to be her someday, God
oh, that's
willing.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know about the 15 grandkids. I might have to up my child game, but we'll see.
Well, you could, or just that's a lot of pressure on your kid.
I'm not going to do that to him.
Yeah, he's a clergy kid. He's going to be messed up somehow. It's
but
a
the
given.
Son of a preacher woman.
Right?
I kind of fear for all that PK stuff.
Yeah, I didn't
How
start.
To
a,
do it well.
I did not start a college fund for my kids. I just started a therapy fund. I was like, we're just going to need it. Yeah, I mean. I'll do the best I can, but let's just be honest. Mm. All right, so that Rylage was a nice little... people, you don't need stuff. You need books, but you don't need stuff. Right?
And there you have it.
There you have it. Jamie, what are you riled about?
It bothers me when people act like different religions pray to different gods.
You're a Paul Knitter kind of person?
I'm just, if you're a monotheist, you're a monotheist. There's one, and it's
right.
And it's insulting and frankly kind of idolatrous to presume that those who you either don't philosophically agree with or just don't understand have to just be. I mean, is do we have the pantheon up there? I mean, what are they talking about?
Oh,
yes,
yeah. That'd
have,
be awesome.
Well, I mean, we have other gods, but it's usually our computers and our phones and our children.
We're back
and
to the
our
things.
Work. Right, exactly.
Except for the children, that's not
right.
Right,
but that's not who these folks are accusing
right.
people of praying to, and I just find it offensive and
so,
belittling.
Do you mean like specifically when people would say like Islam is not the same at all as Christianity, and there's no comparison, and it's a totally different
mm-hmm,
faith,
mm-hmm. stuff like that, right? And the professor at Wheaton who had severed her ties because
this is the one
she,
in Wheaton, Illinois, not Wheaton, Mass. Because
right, well, she implied her name escapes me. I apologize, but
I
she implied that. That Allah and Yahweh were the same.
Right.
Heaven forfend. You know what?
Which they kind of are.
God's got a couple of names.
Yeah.
A lot of names. And we all just use different ones. And I think we should just embrace that. And not... I think it comes from this place of feeling threatened. You know, what are you so afraid of?
Right.
And you know, what is it? John Shelby Spong says, any God that has to be protected from the truth has already died. So if you have to keep your God in a safe little box and not let... that God know that there may be other things happening. I mean,
right.
God doesn't need that.
And I wonder if people are so afraid of a different faith, and let's just say Islam.
Well, it's the common boogeyman.
Yeah,
right.
That's the faith du jour that we're told to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of. And then to say like, well, Islam and Christianity are both really worshiping the same God. And then they say, well, wait a second, we're supposed to be afraid of these people. And if they're worshiping the same God as we are, maybe they're like us, or maybe they're right and we're wrong, because
right.
there's also that. There's this idea of mutual exclusivism,
right.
that one has to be right, and if one is right, then everyone else has to be wrong.
Right.
Which
wrong.
Right. Yeah, which we've moved beyond that, folks. We've not all of us, but those of us who are educated and enlightened have moved beyond, except for at Wheaton College in Illinois.
It just seems really short-sighted, and it doesn't
yeah.
serve the world, and it doesn't serve God by whatever name you call
right.
that being. I mean, it just is damaging, and I think I wish that religious folks could get comfortable enough in their own faithful skin that they could learn and appreciate. I mean, if I lived in a culture where someone called out five times a day, stop what you're doing, and use your whole body
right.
and attend to the divine, I would be a better Christian.
Probably. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know.
but I think there are things that we can learn and appreciate and respect, and it just seems like, what are you so scared of?
Right. And it's not saying we're the same religions.
No, we're not. We're not the same religion, but I believe there's one God, period.
What do you do with Hinduism?
Hinduism is, you know, if you look at it, they will tell you. I remember when I was a teenager, I had a conversation with a good friend of mine who was Hindu, and he tried to tell me that basically it was all the same as Christianity. At that time, I was like, I can't really get with you. I can't agree with that. But,
right.
I mean, theirs is that they really are, ultimately, it's one God with many manifestations.
Right, right.
And there's many iterations and many aspects that are described through these different beings, and these different, you know, and the whole reincarnation makes it a bit more complicated. But you know, the Bible talks about reincarnation in interesting ways that we usually try to gloss over.
Right.
You know, what they were asking Jesus, now, who are you come back?
Right. I mean, are you Elijah?
Do you ever preach on that? And the implications for what is that supposed to mean for us?
You know, I think in my imagination, in our hermeneutical imagination, mm-hmm. we make an immediate allegorical leap.
Ah.
I think like we connect, we create dots to connect, which would say, wait, are you Elijah come back? It was like, well, clearly they mean, are you like the next Elijah?
Right,
are you
right.
Not
are you? Because we've been saving this chair for you for a while.
Yeah, please.
So please sit down. Sit.
That'd be kind of funny. Yeah. You're like, no, I'll stand.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, so it gets complicated when you dig in more deeply.
Yeah,
But just to say that it's just shorthand for offense, and I just wish that we could not be so scared of each other like that.
So, yeah, and so I think part of that is, you know, we need to question where these claims come from, where these truth claims come from. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, you know, that's one truth claim to saying they're not the same God. That's right. A truth claim and say, where does that come from? What's fueling that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and if it's fear, if it's, you know, uneasy, anxiety, then maybe you really need to think about that, and then really look at where these other faith traditions are coming from and stuff. But Hinduism pushes me a little bit more.
Right.
You know, Islam, Judaism, that's an easier. Right. Leap for me to make
the same. Book, right?
Yeah. Got the same book for the most part, kind of.
Well, but it's similar stories and similar characters.
Right.
I mean, we can see that those common roots. But I think you're right. It examining that forces us to examine other assumptions, because if I can dismiss your God, then I can dismiss you. You perhaps aren't quite as human as me.
Right.
It's okay for me to hate you and to.
And we've otherized.
Oh, absolutely. And that makes, you know, what is it, the idea that stereotypes save time, so you can dismiss whole categories of people when you dismiss their God.
So you're against efficiency, that's what I'm getting.
I am not always the most efficient, that's probably true. I have a bit more of a Quaker sensibility in that regard.
In Jamie's sermons, there's long moments of silence.
Actually, there are.
Are there?
There are.
Oh,
yes,
yeah?
Because sometimes I'm thinking, is that really what I want to say? Or the Spirit says, I think you need to skip that part. Or, and this, the search committee asked me, what's that about? And I was not aware of it until, until they pointed it out to me. But I think I picked it up from Le Show, Harry Shearer.
I used to listen to that all the time.
I loved it. And then I can't find it on the radio very easily. But he would do this thing where he would just drop something and then just let it spin out in the silence. And you would think, is this dead air time? And he would just let it hang there. And then the brain starts to kick in. I thought, oh, Brother Harry's got something going there. So I think I picked that one up from Harry Shearer. You know,
let's try that right now. Say something really poignant. Come on, say something poignant now. So, folks, you don't need things.
But usually he had some nice music underlaying that, so maybe you can bring it in.
I can do that. I can edit out that silence, too.
let it spin out.
Yeah, bring them back together. And be like,
but the idea is that, like, you think, well, can I say something profound on the fly? Or is the silence the greatest profundity? You know, or whatever.
That was it.
Yeah.
You missed it.
No. I was letting you come to that conclusion on your own, because we appreciate more deeply what we grasp of our own accord rather than what is spoon-fed to us.
Right.
Mm.
Although.
That's the Baptist ethos. Work it out with fear and trembling.
Again, that's not efficient.
It's not efficient, but it's a lot more effective. It is more efficient. You know why? get this, because, you know, have you ever been in a Quaker meeting?
Yes.
Okay. I love the Quakers. I used to worship with them. I used to work for the American Friends Service Committee. And the arriving at something takes a long, long time, because you got to have silence and prayer and contemplation and consensus. But once you get to consensus, everybody's on board. And then, boom, all steam
so,
ahead.
Jamie, you know that probably at least 70% of the things I say, I'm not being serious.
Only 70?
I mean, well, I mean, right. On a good day.
Okay.
So when I said, anyway, you're right, though.
I am also sometimes painfully
right.
Literal.
Yeah. I can't wait till we get to scripture.
But then I draw the dots.
Okay.
To allegory. Yeah,
there we go. Yeah, those hermeneutical dots. All right, so folks, question your own assumptions. In all likelihood, when we're talking about the divine, the other, you know, that which is greater than that can be seen, whatever other word we want to use.
Maybe that's the initial, like, getting your feet wet. Just play with, in your own prayer life, addressing the divine in a different term.
Yeah.
Use something, use pronouns that you don't use. Use a name you wouldn't use. I mean, if you are at a loss, I refer you to the scriptures.
Right.
But there's a great body of suggestions there. And I think that because language is really important. And the way we speak about things shapes how we think about it and how we feel about it. So I think that I mean, we are being a bit facetious, but I'm actually, you know,
no,
really
I think
serious
that's...
at the same time. And so if you're feeling kind of stuck in a rut about how you think about God and how you think about others, then I encourage you to think, well, maybe God is like a hen. Yeah, and we're under those wings. Like, what does that tell?
Oh, okay. I was thinking of Shalom Osterlin that wrote a short story, God is a Big Chicken.
Oh, well, that's a different one.
Yeah, that's totally different.
Yeah, but...
So, but that idea, like the mother hen bringing...
Oh, you know, or a rock. I mean, a rock is the least judgmental thing I know.
Yeah, except the one that falls on my head.
That was not the rock's fault.
Oh,
you were standing there.
Nah, I totally blame the rock. All right, so that was one of the most circuitous rileges I've done in a long time.
You're welcome. I think you said I was not particularly efficient.
That's fine. That's totally fine. All right. Okay, for scripture, Jamie wanted to do originally Song of Solomon, but this is a family-friendly podcast.
You teens who love to listen to this podcast, is church boring? You feeling a little dull?
I know.
Sermon not holding your attention? Friends, open right to the middle of the Bible where there's the raciest love poetry you'll find this side of your hymnal.
I remember when I was like 12, I discovered it and thought it was the funniest thing, and we would...
We'd always read it during church.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that sermon, sawdust, but songs.
That or the story of Daniel.
There's a lot going on there.
But we're going to go to Ecclesiastes.
Excellent.
We're going to go happy, fun stuff.
Different kind of wisdom.
Different kind of wisdom, right. And we're looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Jamie wants to do the whole chapter, so we're not going to read it.
All right, we don't have to do that. We don't have to do the whole thing. We can just do some key.
No, we're going all in. I mean, we can pull out key verses and stuff, but usually, oftentimes.
It's your show, Jonathan.
You're a guest host, so, you know, hospitality, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, don't drop the mic. No, oftentimes we read the passage ahead of time, but we're not going to read all chapter 9.
Okay.
It's just too long.
It's really not. And I'm okay. We could have read it in the time we quibbled here.
I know, but that's what makes it fun. I'll talk about something, but not talk about it.
All right.
But so chapter 9. But you gave a great summary. Can you give that summary again of your feel of chapter 9 here in Ecclesiastes?
Well, it says essentially that we're not promised tomorrow. It says here a live dog is better than a dead lion.
Right.
So you have been given this day. So you should enjoy it with the one you've been given to love. That you should clothe yourself in white, which may be impractical if you're leaning up against fences.
Right,
that you should always oil your head, and that this
What if it's after Labor Day?
Well, then you ought not. But this idea that we don't have control over, you know, it says the race is not to the swift, nor, you know, bread to the wise, right. nor riches to the intelligent. Everything happens to everyone.
Right. So what do you do? And not for a reason. It just happens.
It just happens. Things happen. As the Buddhists would say, you know, it's suffering.
Right.
As Christians would say, suffering.
Right. Right.
So I think it's, what do we do with it? What do we do with what we've been given? You know?
And this isn't all suffering, this passage.
It's
all
like, it's actually kind of beautiful.
Yeah, there's joy to it as well. Mm-hmm. There, you know, things can be good, things cannot be good. Mm-hmm. Take what you got.
Right, and so I think it's, because I think often there has been a strain within Christianity that's always looking to the next world, always looking to the next life.
Right,
To the detriment of this one. And I mean, we talked about that in terms of the ecology and the life, but I think it just in terms of our relationships. I think that Christians need to be in this world. That's what Jesus taught us. He came to this world. He wasn't some ephemeral floaty ghost.
Right.
He was in this world, eating and drinking and being with people, and so much so they called him a glutton,
right.
a drunkard.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what do we do? I'm not saying be a gluttonous drunkard, but it says that we are to savor this life.
Right.
And that's, you know, part of God's gift.
And there's a sense of, like, of also, you know, think about the Rylage I had about, you know, this idea we're supposed to get things, accumulate
right.
things. This
right.
isn't saying accumulate no. things. It's saying just enjoy what you have.
Right. Well, and it essentially says that the things aren't going to help you. I mean, it doesn't
right.
say this here, but, you know, there's no U-Haul following the hearse. There's no pocket in a shroud. So we know that this basically says that when you die, that's it. I mean, there's no afterlife in this.
Right.
I mean, it's the whole Sheol. You all go down there, and it's kind of shady.
Your body decomposes.
Right, right. Good compost. So in our house,
nice.
My husband and I always talk about, you know, what kind of tree we want to have planted over our
your grave,
our composted your remains. And it's,
yeah.
the discussion is fruit or nut.
Nice, very
yeah,
nice.
Do it that what you will. But yeah, so what, you know, this, you know, the living know they'll die, the dead know nothing, they have no more reward, even the memory of them is lost. I mean, that could be a little depressing, but it says even their love and their hate and their envy have perished. They won't come again and share under what happened. So what do we do with it now? So how do we think
right.
about those things when we're happening? How do we maybe hold them a bit more loosely and a bit more preciously at the same time, without
right.
being too precious?
So one of the places where I could see this being dangerous
hmm.
would be the person who has much.
Yes.
Looking at someone who has very little
mm.
and saying, you know, take what you got.
Hmm. It could. And I think that this text would probably allow for that.
Right. And so that's obviously, you know, don't read this text and say, this is it.
Right.
You know, we'll put it in the larger context of all of Holy Scripture.
Right, right.
But there is that sense. So, you know, if you are someone with much, and you see someone who doesn't have little, you should share most of what you have, and not saying, "Well, what about tomorrow?"
I mean,
saying,
yes.
"Today I have stuff,
right?
Why not share what I'm enjoying with others?"
Well, and I think that's a lovely pastoral gloss that isn't in this actual text.
No, it's not in this text.
No,
I'm
I think I hear what you're saying, because this actually says, you know, I've gone through everything, I've tried to see what it is to have everything, and I've seen
right.
what it is to have nothing, and it kind of. Maybe it didn't make that big of a difference, which I think is a privileged position to be able to say that.
Right.
Because someone who's had nothing will be like, well, let me try having everything and just see how that works out for me.
Right.
You know, so I do think that that's sort of a trust fund kind of response. But I think it gets to this deeper issue of, okay, this is all pretty fleeting.
Yeah.
It is all really fleeting, and it's temporary. And given that, what then do we do? Vanity, vanity, all is vanity under the sun.
Vanity, right.
But that sense of it's passing really fast. So how can we just savor it?
We should be spending more time reading.
We should, or whatever it is, you know, I mean, that makes it meaningful.
So let's bring the idea of Sabbath into this.
Okay.
You know, this is not mentioning in Sabbath at all.
Mm.
This is more, like mm-hmm. you said, holist, more looking at life broadly.
Okay.
In the end. But the idea of Sabbath,
mm-hmm.
That idea of staying in that moment, in that day. So I just read Heschel's book,
mm-hmm.
The Sabbath.
Okay.
And he makes a big deal about time.
Mm.
Ironically, it's about taking
mm-hmm.
a day off.
Sure.
But saying, you know, this is it's the one thing that we can't hold on to, that we can't claim, that
right.
we can't hide, you know.
Right.
So to take time and to say, this is now God's, and to just be in that time.
Or to say, it's been God's all along.
Right.
And to honor that and recognize it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So then to say, so to take a day of Sabbath and to say, I'm just going to take this day as it happens. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to pre-plan it. I'm not going to make a list of all the things I need to accomplish today. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm going to just take this day as it is.
Well, and in Judaism, the things that are, if you are a strict observer of the Sabbath, the things that are permitted or allowed, I mean, you're not supposed to rush around and cook food and clean the house and
right.
turn on electronics. You are supposed to read books.
Yeah.
And enjoy walks, to take delight in your beloved. I mean, all these things
right.
are encouraged on that day. And they are these things, these gifts of time and of being that I think we forget. And I think that it is no accident that in this list of top 10, it says, take a day off, don't kill people.
Right.
I find that that is intimately linked. And I mean, my Sabbath isn't on Sunday because
right.
I work on
Sunday.
You
gotta work, right.
But I do have a Sabbath day where I try to not turn on anything that has a screen. I don't dress like a clergy person. I try to work in my garden and play with my child and just, I don't look at my
right.
sermon. And I had a friend in divinity school who took every Sunday off, and we would all be scrambling, trying to write papers and finish things for Monday morning, and she'd go take a long walk and then maybe go to the movies. And I was like, how can you do this? And she's
right.
like, aren't we all training for the ministry? and it was she who helped me really take that seriously. I mean, I
yeah.
grew up the grandchild of people who, I mean, this is, I grew up with blue laws, and you didn't do a great number of things on Sunday in my grandparents' home, but we didn't, I don't think we take it as seriously now, but I think that there's a real gift in that. And
yeah.
it's that, like you say, this moment, this time, this being with people, that all this other stuff will get done.
Right.
Because it has to get done. But this moment with this person and this beam of light won't come again. And if you miss that, then it's gone.
Right.
And to what end? And I think that that's what this text says. I mean, it says... enjoy life with the one you love
yeah.
all the days and
so yeah,
eat
verse
your bread
7
and drink your wine.
Yeah, verse 7 says,
yeah.
Go eat your bread with enjoyment and drink your wine with merry heart, for God has long ago approved what you do. So there we go.
Oh, but see, okay, what do we do with that, Calvinist?
God oh, I let that go.
Okay.
I just gloss over it.
Right.
I mean, yeah, so if you want to be hyper-deterministic about it, saying that God knew this day was coming and
well,
set it up,
go,
but
that's
not my thing.
Conversation,
no,
but.
It's not. No. But I mean, but idea though, you know, God, I could see, though, God has long ago approved what you do. God created 6 days. Creation didn't end, but rested on the seventh day and continued. And, you know, and then God's, you know, Ten Commandments, you know, take the Sabbath day.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of enjoying life is something that God created us to do.
Well, and again, going back to these little flowers on these weeds growing in West Texas, why? That's just profligate beauty.
Mm.
It's just... You know, God clearly delights in all of this
right.
and puts wondrous things where no human eye will ever see it. It's there for its own delight and beauty, and it exists for its own purpose. In the same way, I mean, we ought to also just revel in that.
Right. Yeah. So, people, let's push Sabbath while we're at it.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I am all for it. It makes me a kinder, more humane being. And I have found that if I know that there's one day where I can let my mind be fallow,
mm-hmm.
where I don't have to think about things, where I know there's not a meeting or a have to, a shoulda,
right.
then I don't have resentment the other 6 days. I'm willing to do all
work
of that.
Work a little harder for that day
Absolutely,
off.
Because I know that that day is coming when
right.
I will have that. And so I can be much better manager of my time and I don't mind the rest of it because I know that there is a place.
I hear you.
And it's coming.
I hear you. I'm right there with you.
Amen.
So, yeah, so take a day off. Enjoy your life. Yeah, and read Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Read all of Ecclesiastes. It's a great book.
Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge beyond this. So, you know, it doesn't matter what this says whatever your job is, do it well. And
yeah.
do it faithfully and do it mindfully. And do it beautifully. Yeah.
Good. I want to read the first verse of chapter 10.
Okay.
Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a foul oil.
So a little
odor.
Folly outweighs wisdom and honor.
Yeah. Isn't that? anything I can mention, anytime dead flies occurs, then you know that's good stuff. Yep. All right, so read Ecclesiastes chapter 9.
I'm all for it.
So, Jamie, what are you into?
Well, you're going to think I only want to do one thing, is like just be in the dirt and play in the garden.
That's fine.
You know what I would love to see? An aesthetic revolution in what we find beautiful in our own gardens and in church grounds. What if every church in this country didn't have a lawn that no one ever sat on? And that often highly chemicalized fertilizers are poured on, then they put a little sign that says, don't let your dog or your child lick this. What if instead we just had raised gardens where we were growing food, and people who might never want to come in the church, they don't have to, they can come in the outside church, they could eat if you're hungry, come and take what you need. And then how many churches have these great big kitchens?
Right.
Decent kitchens.
Yeah.
Canning party, preserving party. So you've got these church ladies, maybe in their 80s, who have basements full of ball jars waiting. And you've got these 20-something hipsters who want to know how to can and pickle. This is a marriage made in heaven.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm all for that. And it's a shifting aesthetic. Because I will say that I used to put all my food crops in the backyard. And then I realized the sunshine was best in the front. And so I started putting them in the front, and that was not universally appreciated by my neighbors.
Oh.
I think it's a shift in what we think is beautiful. And so how do we change that idea and embrace that tomato plant is actually pretty lovely.
Right. I do in my yard during the spring, I've created a dandelion sanctuary.
Well, if there's not dandelions in your grass, it's not healthy soil.
There we go.
It means that it's, monoculture is bad for people and for crops.
So that's why I try to make space for the dandelions in the spring. And in the summer, in the late summer, I actually have a crabgrass sanctuary.
Ah, well, there you go.
I try to make room for as much crabgrass as possible.
So you can be dandy and crabby.
And crabby.
Depending on the season.
I can be a dandy or a crab. And we'll let that sit where. So yeah, so people do plant gardens, plant them in the front yard, challenge the aesthetics.
You know, I can just say if I'm just going full-on urban homesteader now.
Nice.
Clotheslines.
I'm totally into clotheslines.
I love hanging clothes on the line. I like hanging it in a very particular order.
Yep.
I think Barbara Brown Taylor even talks about that, how she has, like socks as exclamation points at the end of her clothesline prayer. But it is there's something very satisfying about that. And then, sleeping on sheets that have hung outside.
Yeah.
I remember when my folks retired and were selling their house, my mother listed in the real estate listing, solar clothes dryer. I was like, what's that? She goes, it's the clothesline.
But
there are
dryer.
Some neighborhood associations that say you can't have a clothesline, that you can't have.
That's ridiculous.
You can have ornamental kale, but heaven forfend you go and eat the stuff. Yeah. Right? And so, how do we begin that shift of what is beautiful? And, and I remember getting some pushback in my previous community where I served in Milwaukee, and they do have great edible gardens there, but it took a little while. They're saying it won't look right. And I said, it will look right. And I know of a church in Milwaukee, Tippecanoe Presbyterian, and they have like 50 raised garden beds.
Wow.
And they're doing, and I think that's beautiful. It's it's a different aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's not a lush carpet of lawn around your white clapboard church, but it does give the community a pretty profound message about what's going on, where your priorities are, what your values are.
Right.
And what I find is that it draws in people. You have entirely different conversations than you would if you were just unloading your groceries in the back. There's something about getting outside and working and being able to offer people, if you're hungry, help yourself.
Especially
take what you
in
need.
Your front yard.
You do.
There's a suburban shift of moving the porch from the front to the back.
Mm-hmm.
And when that shift happened, the sense of community diminished to a degree.
It went from a porch to a deck.
Yeah. And so instead of sitting on the front porch and talking to people as they walk by, you sit on your back deck and you don't talk to anyone. The garden's in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't talk. But you put the garden in the front yard.
Right.
You'll see people as they walk by.
And I found people will help themselves, whether they've been invited or not.
Yeah.
But you have to have plant enough.
That's that. Yeah. Don't chase them with a shotgun.
No.
We do not advocate that at all.
No.
Under any circumstance.
No.
Even if you've got a union suit that you love to wear and run out.
Nor slingshots. Just don't do it.
Right, yeah.
Just
yeah.
don't do it.
Just let them have it.
Just let them have it. It's not worth it.
You got. There's plenty of food.
More will grow.
All right, so good. Gardening. I am into the movie, it came out a couple years ago, Grand Budapest Motel. Or Hotel. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, I think I saw this.
Wes Anderson flick.
Right.
He's got a certain aesthetic about
him. They're always clearly his films.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like I should be wearing a tie and jacket when I watch his movies.
Probably, but the walls should be, like, with a flocked wallpaper, kind of furry, and maybe pink and olive green.
Yep.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
So I just saw this movie.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it.
It was interesting. What did you like about it?
Well, I liked, the dialogue is fun. Mm-hmm. It's delightful.
It's always very...
Yeah, very snappy. I mean, one of the things I really liked was the main character, the mm-hmm. person who's supposed to be the hero of this story, is someone who just has his own approach to life.
Hmm. Which one did you see as the hero?
The main concierge of the hotel.
Okay.
So that he was somewhat effeminate. Mm. But didn't apologize for it, mm-hmm. and that seemed to be just a part of who he was.
Right.
But you know, but he clearly, you know, somewhat clearly wasn't gay, mm-hmm. and was also clear about that. You know, but you know, slept with older women. But it's like, this is just what I do, mm-hmm. and you know, but his whole approach is unapologetic. This is who I am, mm-hmm. and I am not going to change who I am
to make you more comfortable.
Right. Right, and then in the way he treated everyone with the same kind of respect and mm-hmm. dignity, mm-hmm. no matter. And there was a scene when he was in the prison, and he's offering food to this one giant, burly, you know, prisoner.
Yes.
And you know, he should be trembling, and he's just like, take this. He's like, you know what you need, and he puts it. So you need some salt. And he puts salt on it. Now try it. It'll be delicious. I mean, he just treat him with the same kind of respect they would treat everyone. And I really appreciated that. It's not mm-hmm. someone who is a strong, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to win might, you know, power over everything else. It's instead like, I'm just going to be who I am. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through this. I mean, sometimes he's a little bit demanding when he didn't get his perfume or whatever, you know.
Right.
But that's part of who he was. And I really appreciated that. That's one of those mm-hmm. things about it. And just the whole feel of the movie. It was just really, it was nice. I wouldn't recommend it. The language is a little strong. So mm-hmm. if, you know, looking at kids, I would say high school and up mm-hmm. to watch it. But that idea of, and the movie just seemed to be speaking about an idea of a way of life, a way of being mm-hmm. in society, a way of being with others.
Well, that sense of being very at ease in one's own skin is always an attractive quality.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who's slightly effeminate herself, I'm not offended by that notion either.
Well, good, good.
But that idea, I mean, we didn't talk about the other wisdom literature book that I was thinking about, Song of Songs, but part mm-hmm. of what I love about that is that there are kind of equal opportunity adjectives in there. Both partners are very sensual and very strong. They're both described as pillars, and they're both described as beautiful. And, you know, and so that sense that there is a space for that. And I think the people who can be unapologetically who they are, that's always much more attractive and interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you can get cookie cutter cookies.
Yeah, you can find them everywhere.
Yeah. So, it is an interesting film. I hadn't seen that for a while. I may have to go back and
Watch it again. I think that's part of what Wes Anderson does. I mean, you know, one of my favorites of his is The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mm.
I think he did a terrific job with that one. And
I've read the book. I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he diverges from the book.
Okay.
You know, the book is fine. The book mm-hmm. is good. Very good.
Roald Dahl is a piece of work.
Oh, he is. He really is. And I think Wes Anderson just brought his mm-hmm. feel to it. And mm-hmm. it's just great. Great kids movie.
But I mean, there are certain filmmakers who the minute the first scene flashes, you know it's theirs. They have a very particular world that they create for you.
Right, yeah. And that's Tim Burton's another one that you see his movie and you're like, before you even see Johnny Depp, you know it's a Tim Burton movie.
Or Helena Bonham Carter.
Right, you know they're going to be in it somewhere. So Grand Budapest Hotel. So folks, do gardening and watch the Grand Budapest Hotel if you're of age.
And hang your clothes out on the line.
Yeah, hang your clothes on.
It smells great.
Yeah, not now. Well, if you're in New England, it's kind of hard right now.
You could have a sheet of ice sheet, but yes.
Yeah, it's just not fun to sleep in that.
No, it's not.
it just doesn't work.
Those sheets won't be coming in until March.
My mother hangs laundry out in 50 degrees weather. She's like, it'll dry.
Oh, it does. It dries pretty fast.
I know. I have you know, I needed it to be 70 or something.
Well, and coming from West Texas, by the time you finish hanging the last clothespin, it's already dry on the front end. I mean, it dries
right, that's nice.
That fast, right?
Yeah.
It's a little different here.
Yeah, with, yeah, know, we got to give it a little humidity. Time. Yeah, stupid humidity. Stupid humidity.
Ah, it's lovely.
Yeah.
Keeps everything.
Well, Jamie, awesome. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah,
thanks
it's
for
been
coming
a delight
here and
to
doing
be here.
This. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks.
If folks want to find you, what time's your worship service?
11 a.m. You can come to the Christian Education Hour
at
10 o'clock before, which I highly endorse. It's always interesting, engaging, and fun for all ages.
Endorsed by the pastor.
Absolutely.
Good.
So that's at 10 a.m. Then the service itself is at 11. You can podcast us if you're one of those Church of St. Mattress kind of people. But I would also encourage you to be there in the flesh because that's where church really happens.
You need a community. You need a community.
That's true.
So go to First Baptist Church in America, which is in Providence. You
it
can
is.
Find them online at 11 a.m. If you want to find me, so if you're in Rhode Island, you're not far from either of us.
You are not. Nothing's far from
no,
Rhode Island.
No, not at all. But our service starts at 9:30. So you could conceivably
you could do both. If you preach short.
Yeah.
Whoa. You're not a haiku sermon kind of guy?
No, far from it.
What's your average length?
Probably 25 minutes, so it's not
Depends
long.
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Nobody's mad when you preach too short, Jonathan.
Sometimes they are like, Pastor, what was that? I'm like, all right, well, let's get back up there. You need me to do more? What's it? Roll up your sleeves. Here we go.
There we go.
But when I don't preach, when I do a hymn sing, you ever do hymn sings?
I have not in this community, but in other places.
Oh, so much fun.
I love it.
They always go just as long as the services.
Do y'all plan them out in advance, or do you just call out numbers?
I just call out numbers.
It depends on your church musician.
Yeah, that's yeah. Ours, she's very flexible. She can keep up pretty well.
Oh, do you have regular favorites?
Yeah.
What?
The Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Really?
Oh,
is that yours or someone else's?
Someone else's.
My mother loves that one.
It has a good history to it, actually.
I have dreamt the faithful.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, my favorite was, I still like this, When We All Get to Heaven. I guess I've always had sort of,
Mine is Wonderful Grace of Jesus.
Oh, I don't
Wonderful, the matchless grace of Jesus. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's hard to sing. But I love it.
Well, that was my favorite, and I would always hope they would, and there was an old man in my church. It was also his favorite hymn. And we'd kind of eyeball each other because we'd think they're either going to pick the little girl or the old man. Because we got the demographics covered.
Right, right.
And so if they picked him, I would always pick the Star Spangled Banner only because it made everyone stand up. And I loved that. I should have known then there was like this glimmer of either like power mongering or wanting to control the service. And they, you know, this is a place where women didn't have a lot of agency.
Right.
And so they did, but not publicly.
Right, right.
And so I should have known something then that when I wanted everybody to rise, that was the only reason I had him sing that song. It wasn't patriotic fervor. It was get them out of their seats.
Nice.
Yeah.
We had, we did one year and someone picked O Canada.
I always confuse that with O Tannenbaum.
I know, right?
And it but really, really irritates they're every Canadian I know because I start singing, O Canada, Canada, I see
like, no,
you
so,
now and
so,
greet you.
But what happened was nobody was standing up when we were singing, but my father-in-law was in church that day, and he and his wife, they live in Lowville, New York.
Okay.
Lowville's just near Watertown, which is just south of Canada.
Mm.
So like the Salmon Run Mall, which is the big mall in the area, has both an American and Canadian flag hanging there, and his parents were from Canada, so he stood up when we started singing "O Canada."
What is the proper protocol? Does one need to rise for an anthem, regardless? I mean, is it only if it's being played in the nation where it
Americans.
Matters?
Only Americans.
Really? I mean, for the Olympics, I think you're supposed to stand for everybody.
I think out of respect, because everyone's there.
Everyone's there, but if you are in Menasha singing "O Canada,"
is Menasha a place?
It is.
Okay.
Make it up.
Okay.
I honestly don't know. I think probably out of respect, you should at least stand in your heart.
Stand in your heart, right. That's a great way. That's a good pastoral response. You know, stand. I mean, stand anyways. Just always stand. I probably err on the side of caution, right?
In grace.
Yeah.
Being mindful of others. All right.
That's yeah. Good. And if someone says, that's un-American to stand for the Canadian national anthem, be like,
Will you stand for the songs of nations that our nation is at undeclared war with?
Like the North Korean anthem?
Yeah, the whole Axis of Evil anthems.
Yeah, because they're awesome. Oh. Axis of Evil, I mean, they, yeah, that's immediately what I thought. Like, it's clearly like... That's the thing, or death metal. I was thinking like,
isn't that
the people. It's probably something like that. All right, so folks, I was starting to wrap up this podcast, Jamie. That's all right. I was trying to give me my show back.
You said I was a co-host.
That's right, I did.
And trying to keep you from dropping your microphone.
Yeah, right.
Don't break my equipment.
Please go to Ocean State, get your own mics. What was I saying? Oh, so folks, write in first. let us know what the protocol is for other anthems, other national anthems. Mm-hmm. And you can write in that answer and any other questions you might have or suggestions for different toilets or composting or whatever else to 12enough@gmail.com. And you can also, if you have questions for Jamie, you can send them to me at 12enough and I'll ferry them out to her.
If he sees fit.
If I see fit, right. There's a, you know. Yeah, I've got
to. If you make it past the filter of Jonathan Malone,
I have to protect my guest hosts.
All right,
you know I'm very, very protective.
I appreciate that.
So, do you have any other self promotion you want to push?
No.
Just go to First Baptist Church in America.
Absolutely,
good folks there. Good folks.
They are really good people, and the music is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Every week, I'm just stunned.
Great organist there.
Great gifted musician, and the choir. I have to give them some props because. Not reading along, I can always understand the words they're saying.
Oh, wow.
All the way from the balcony to the pulpit.
That's a big deal.
They've got great enunciation.
Good. Diction. It's all about diction.
Mm-hmm. Not always even in English.
No. That's right. Well, it's diction.
There you go.
All right. So if you want to find the show notes for this show or any other past shows, go to 12enough.com. And 12enough is always written out. We're not lazy. We're not efficient. We're not about efficiency in that sense. And you also can find my blog, Theological Snob, where there's, you know, ruminations and musings and those kinds of things. Go to the Facebook page, Facebook.com/12enough, where I sometimes post things that are happening, that kind of stuff. You know, for those of you who listen through the empire known as Apple and on iTunes, rate the show, like the show, share the show with others.
Apples can be composted too.
Yeah, you can compost your iPods. Oh,
sorry,
right. No, that's I expect it from you now. All right, and thank you very much for listening. 12 Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your hosts were Jonathan Malone, the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island, and Jamie Washam, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in America, but can be found in Providence, Rhode Island. The thoughts, ideas, opinions, ruminations, moments of brilliance, and compost jokes, good or otherwise, made on this show do not reflect or represent their congregations, their families, their denominations, the state of Rhode Island, the churches in America, or anything else of that nature. These are their own ideas. This is their podcast.